I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The owner of a Center City, Philadelphia building that collapsed while under demolition, killing six people, told jurors today that he was heartbroken over the deaths. WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports.
Richard Basciano wiped away tears after being asked about the building collapse on June 5, 2013. That's when one of the freestanding walls pancaked onto and crushed a busy Salvation Army thrift store next door. Basciano has said he was in the bathroom at the time, but knew something had fallen because of the dust cloud covering the area. He said he left for an eye doctor appointment soon afterwards, but has been going, quote, through hell ever since learning about the six lives lost that day. He also testified about mistakes made by the people he hired for the project and lamented he was not more hands-on with the project. Basciano ended his testimony early after becoming emotional. "I can't go on," he told jurors. Testimony resumes tomorrow. I'm Aaron Moselle, WHYY News.
Philadelphia's long-awaited, much-debated pre-K expansion is underway. City leaders today announced 2,000 new high-quality pre-K openings made possible by money from Philadelphia's sweetened beverage tax. The slots won't open until January, but parents can start applying today. Details from WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
What you're hearing there is the whole music for 1-844-PHL-PRE-K, the hotline for parents who want in on the city's pre-K expansion. It's hold music that's been years in the making. In mid-2015, then-Mayor Michael Nutter formed a commission on universal pre-K. His successor, Jim Kenney, made pre-K a signature issue and battled for a tax to support it.
As of this moment, families can now call and apply for free quality pre-K, and I believe that's just an awesome change in our environment.
All city families are eligible for PHL pre-K, though the 78 centers that are slated to receive expansion money are concentrated in low-income areas. The subsidy covers school year, school day pre-K, meaning families may have to pay extra if they want childcare for after school and summer hours. The city plans to add 6,500 quality pre-K seats by 2021. That's not universal coverage, but it's a step. At a press conference to announce the expansion, city pre-K director and longtime early education advocate Ann Gemmel fought back tears.
"This is something, you know, I've been working on for years, so it's awesome. You made me emotional again. That's so wrong."
She says she's happy for the kids who will benefit, the providers who will grow their small businesses, and maybe most of all for the city.
"This proves to so many of us Philadelphians that Philadelphia can imagine big things and do big things."
And as the calendar advances toward January, Philadelphia will have to answer at least one more question. Can it do big things well? I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
The state of Pennsylvania could set a record this year, hosting the most expensive U.S. Senate race ever. Outside groups, independent of the candidates themselves, have spent more than $70 million to influence the race between incumbent Republican Pat Toomey and Democratic challenger Katie McGinty. WHYY's Dave Davies has this look at who's weighing in and what they're doing.
To most of us, $1 million is a lot of money, and it's a lot to spend on a political campaign. Want to guess how many different groups have spent more than $1 million on the Pennsylvania Senate race? 3, 6? 20 different groups funneling money from all over the country are spending here, most of it for advertising. As a result, when you turn on your television, you get this.
"Katie McGinty supports the Iran deal.
Pat Toomey voted to rewrite rules to..."
"McGinty made thousands from companies she..."
"And Toomey has repeatedly voted to block reforms."
"Katie McGinty, special interest profits for her. Special interest taxes for her."
Yikes. According to the Center for Responsive Politics, the outside spending so far is at $70 million and growing, with $4 out of every $5 going to attack ads and mailings. So far, the liberal and democratic forces backing Katie McGinty are about $3 million ahead of the conservative and Republican groups on Pat Toomey's side. The biggest single spender is the Senate Majority PAC, a committee funded by wealthy Democrats with ties to Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid. Here's some of their handiwork.
"Do you own a plane? Do you own a bank? Pat Toomey owned both.
but it's the fact that Toomey owns a seat in the U.S. Senate that should really concern us.
That group alone has spent more than $15 million on the race. The second biggest spender is on the other side, Freedom Partners Action Fund, funded by the conservative Koch brothers and their allies.
We struggle to make ends meet, but Katie McGinty? The last time McGinty was in government, she backed the largest tax hike in decades.
That refers to McGinty's stint as chief of staff to Governor Tom Wolf. His proposed tax plan would have raised some taxes to fund education and other needs, but would also have lowered property taxes. It was never enacted. Some of the advertising is aimed at niche markets, like this spot from the Senate Majority PAC running on black-oriented radio stations.
President Obama knows now we must protect his legacy. That's why he's backing Katie McGinty for U.S. Senate. He knows Katie McGinty supports raising the minimum wage, equal pay for equal work for women, and increased investments in early childhood education for our kids.
There are labor, feminist, and environmental groups supporting McGinty, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce supporting Toomey, and on it goes. Most groups are super PACs, which accept large contributions but do report their donors. However, some are nonprofits, which conceal their donors, so-called dark money groups. So many ads coming from so many groups can overwhelm journalists and watchdogs trying to keep track of them. Anna Orso is a reporter with the website BillyPenn.com, the Pennsylvania partner of PolitiFact, which checks the accuracy of political claims. She says months ago, newspapers and TV ad trackers were keeping up with political ads.
They're checking new commercials every time they're released. I'm certainly not seeing that as much anymore, and I think a lot of that can be attributed to the volume. Looking at every single ad is too much.
What about the candidates? McGinty says even though she benefits from the outside money, she doesn't like it.
I think that there's far, far too much money in politics, and I've been hard charging to do critically important things like overturn this court decision, Citizens United, that really opened the floodgates. It's a big difference between myself and Senator Toomey, who has voted against overturning Citizens United.
Here's how Toomey responded in the candidates' debate in Pittsburgh.
Look, I've always preferred more transparency in the system, and the simple way to do this is have all this money go to candidates and let the candidates be responsible and accountable for it and require disclosure.
Toomey is against contribution limits. He believes donors should give what they want, and candidates themselves should take responsibility for the cash and the messages it funds. One of the groups putting money into the race is a little unusual.
This is Senator Pat Toomey.
That's an ad attacking Toomey from a group called End Citizens United. It's crusading against all that outside money going into local contests, but to get the message across, it's doing just that, spending a lot of money independent of the campaign. But spokesman Adam Bozzi says End Citizens United is different from the big super PACs. It's a traditional political committee and takes no checks bigger than $5,000.
We're giving a voice to American families across the country who have been shut out by a system that is stacked against them. And we're taking on this band of billionaires who have stacked the deck in their own favor.
The group targets officials and candidates who will defend the Supreme Court Citizens United ruling. They've put $2.2 million into attacking Toomey. Pennsylvania is the most expensive race in the country so far. Vivica Novak of the Center for Responsive Politics says the spending by outside groups in this race is already even with the North Carolina Senate race of 2014.
And that race set a record for spending by super PACs and other outside groups. There's still 3 weeks to go to Election Day, so there's no doubt that Pennsylvania will hold the new record.
Dave Davies, WHYY News.
You can learn more about the outside groups putting money into the Pennsylvania Senate race at newsworks.org. 72 degrees at 6:13. This evening's forecast, cloudy skies falling back to 64 degrees overnight. Tomorrow, showers likely, otherwise cloudy, the high 72 degrees. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. A cadre of state, city, and private industry leaders gather today to announce a new program in North Philadelphia intended to improve residents' health. WHYY's Irina Zhorov reports that the Health Enterprise Zone Initiative will take a holistic approach to addressing health problems.
Within the health enterprise zone, nearly a third of residents live below the poverty line, and people have significantly lower life expectancies than residents in wealthier parts of Philadelphia. The idea is for hospitals, universities, community centers, and others in the zone to figure out more effective ways to use existing resources to address those issues. Pennsylvania Secretary of Human Services Ted Dallas says the mission covers everything from healthcare access to job opportunities.
When you look at the wealth and the resources that this country has, the fact that some folks have a 20-year lower life expectancy than people outside of this area should be unacceptable to everybody. So with that will, with all those institutions, with everybody working together, our bet is there's a better way to do this by coordinating and collaborating instead of competing and getting everyone around the table to find solutions that help change some of those numbers for you.
Mayor Jim Kenney says the ultimate goal is to ensure all residents can grow up healthy.
God put us all here to meet our potential. And for many reasons, many of our residents don't because of the obstructions they find in their lives. Our job as government is to remove those obstacles so that people can experience great quality of life and make their children's lives better than theirs were.
The first step is assembling committees to analyze where resources are missing. The Department of Human Services plans to announce employment initiatives this January and will identify super utilizers of the hospitals in order to target non-emergency care for them. The state is also making $1.5 million available to schools in the zone to improve health care for students. Irina Jorov, WHYY News.
The tiny home movement is growing in popularity across the country. Tiny living, typically, is about downsizing and living simply. But two Dover women think these very small homes could be the answer to Delaware's growing homeless problem. WHYY's Shirley Min reports.
On a busy street in Dover, a 10 by 20 foot tiny home sits in front of a church. Inside, it's very tight, but there's a living space, kitchen, pull-out bed, bathroom, and utilities, everything you'd need in just 200 square feet. Sue Harris believes giving someone with nothing 200 square feet to call his own can make a dent in Delaware's homeless population.
There was such a dire need for the next step in the homeless process and getting out of the homeless cycle, and that was affordable housing and the need for somewhere for these folks to be able to transition to after they've come out of the shelter.
So Harris and friend Kathy Capera started the nonprofit Port Hope Delaware to provide tiny homes for the homeless. It's a concept sprouting up across the country.
Housing isn't the only answer, but without housing, there all the other problems that are solved kind of fall behind the wayside if you end up back in the street again. So it is a huge part of the puzzle.
Partnering with Victory Church in Dover, the pilot plan calls for 15 tiny homes for 15 people to start. The micro houses would sit on land donated by Victory Church and be named Village of Victory. With donated lumber and help from volunteers, Harris estimates it'll cost $12,000 to build each one.
Each one of these units can be built for what it might cost for one hospital stay for pneumonia that a lot of these folks end up in the streets end up with.
Harris envisions gardens, rain catchment systems, solar panels, everything to make the Village of Victory completely self-sustaining.
We can, in Delaware, really get a handle on this. We've got three counties. We can start with Kent County and spread out.
But zoning and septic issues have delayed the project for now. And some neighbors have started a no tiny homes movement, posting signs in their yards. I knocked on some of their doors, but no one would speak with me or answer. Pastor Aaron Appling of Victory Church says neighbors are worried about who will be moving in next door.
They think we're going to be bringing in, you know, murderers and rapists and all those, you know, things that maybe the stereotype of homeless people are.
But Harris says anyone being considered for the Village would undergo a background check, and it would be an alcohol and drug-free environment.
We'll know everything about these guys. We'll know which are the best fits, who will fit in a community situation like this, and who will cooperate with each other. Anyone causing trouble will, as they say, be voted off the island.
It's an excellent idea. They're trying to put people in a place.
That's Alexis Sims. The 21-year-old is homeless. She suffers from lupus and recently got out of an abusive relationship. The autoimmune disease robbed Sims of her vision, causes joint pain, and damaged her skin. She's not eligible for a tiny home because she has her 2-year-old and her mom with her, plus a baby on the way. They're all homeless. The church is helping Sims out for now.
We're people. We're humans. We eat like regular people. We breathe like regular people. We're regular people. Some people look at us as a disease or something because we're homeless. We're regular people. And just as like everybody else want a warm place to stay, so do we.
Harris says everyone wants the homeless to take care of themselves. She says the proposed tiny village is her attempt to set up a system so they can. From the Delaware Desk, I'm Shirley Min, WHYY News.
Finally this evening, the Four Seasons of the Year, subject for countless poems and stories. And in the world of Baroque music, one of the best-loved works is The Four Seasons by Antonio Vivaldi. Tempesta di Mare, the Baroque orchestra based in Philadelphia, is celebrating its 15th season with what they're calling a season of seasons.
We're basing the repertoire choices on Vivaldi's Four Seasons. And we're expanding from there to a lot of other lesser-known repertoire that is in one way or another related to Vivaldi's seasons.
Gwyn Roberts is co-artistic director of Tempesta di Mare.
The Four Seasons are full of explicit and implied imagery. Vivaldi wrote them with sonnets embedded in the music. They're actually written into the part books that the original players played from and that our players will play from as well.
Fellow co-director Richard Stone describes the opening movement.
They're dancing and celebrating the harvest, and then there's a reveler who just goes a little bit too far in his revelry, and all of a sudden he becomes the center of attention, sort of like dancing with a lampshade on his head.
Though Vivaldi was vivid with the poetic language he inserted into the Four Seasons, like many of his contemporaries, he was a bit more loose with the music notation.
The notation is not super explicit. So there's a lot that is open to interpretation and is expected from us as performers, so we can really put our own stamp on it.
Tempesta di Mare will perform their concert program, Fall, A Chill in the Air, this weekend. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Advocates of worker cooperatives say that involving employees in ownership and management leads to increased pay and better work environments. Philadelphia City Council is considering how to foster the development of co-ops, and we'll hear more tomorrow evening. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight. We'll